Oak session number 13559, reel 1.
Could you tell me first where you were born, please?
I'm born in Copenhagen, 1920. In fact, on the 29th of February.
What did your father do for a living?
He was an engineer in the Burmeister & Wain shipbuilding firm.
Did you go to school in Copenhagen?
I got to school in Copenhagen, yes. The same school for 12 years. And then I became what we call a student on the mathematics line.
At the university there?
No, in a school. You have different lines when you study in gymnasium, as we call it. I was on the mathematics line. And after 12 years, you have finished, and you can enter a university if you want to. But I went to an education as an officer, and to be able to enter an after school, you must have also a language line or from the gymnasium. So I had to make both lines, so a mathematics line and language line. And then you can enter an after school when you have the first training as an recruit, and then you have a cadet school, and then you can come to after school. So, in fact, I was 20 years when I entered after school.
Why did you want to go in for the army?
Well, I, of course, I was under a certain influence from my father and the family, and my political opinion was formed in the gymnasium. And then I guess the political situation in Germany, our neighbor, and all that, I felt I required to do something if necessary.
What were your political opinions then?
I was a conservative.
Had you visited Germany?
Oh, yes. No, not upon that time, no.
What was your opinion about the regime in Germany?
Well, I was very little in favor of it. I was in opposition, of course, to Hitler and all what he stands for.
Did you feel that Germany was a threat to Denmark?
Yes. I had the feeling, yes. And especially on account we have a common border, you know, and the Danes living south of the border was under a certain pressure from the Germans, and this minority was, in fact, very often mistreated by the Germans. And on the other side, the German minority on the northern side of the border, some Danish, they had much better living condition. So there was a difference between the two minorities. Probably you know that the southern part belonged to Denmark for years ago. In 1864, we lost that part. So that was one of the reasons, the treatment of the Danish minority south of the Danish border, the Jutland-Germany border.
Did you ever meet any of the German minority in Denmark?
Pardon?
Did you ever meet or get to know any of the German minority
yes,
in Denmark?
Yes, I had, on the counter, I have an uncle living in Sønderborg, in the southern part of Jutland. He was a former German soldier. He was forced to be a soldier when the borderline was north of Sønderborg. And he told me about how they treated the Danes south of the border, and I visited him in Sønderborg. And there was very hard feelings between the Germans and the Danes, both north and south of the border, on account of they have moved the border from north, from south to north after 64. And then in 1920, there was a reunion, so the border was moved to our advantage.
What did your uncle tell you about the treatment of the Danes in Germany?
Oh, you know, about the work, taxes, school condition. They might not use a Danish flag, and instead they make such a white stripe in a flag pole to demonstrate, as no flag, just this curved line. And also about young people who want to engage and marry, but on each side it was very difficult for the parents.
Were the Germans in Denmark loyal to the country?
Many, many were loyal. Some, of course, joined the Nazi party, but a lot of them were loyal to Danish authorities, and they, in fact, they tried to escape from the pressure the Nazis put upon them. So when you, for instance, in Sønderborg, Sønderborg, want to shop, you have certain shops you will not go into on account of Germans or Danish. So the town was partied, in fact. And they're loyal to the Danes. They could not go into a Danish shop on account of the Germans had watched them. So in 39, of course, well, the European relations were worse and worse. They made a lot of pressure upon the Danes. So in fact, it was very, very bad conditions, in fact, for both sides.
Now, you were training to be a soldier. Where were you trained to be a soldier?
In Sønderborg, or Sønderborg, we say in Danish. You know where it is? It's in the southern part, it's on an island called Als, A-L-S. It's not a town about 20,000-30,000 people, I guess.
Were you being trained there when, in April 1940?
No, no, you see, we moved in when the war began in September 39. My battalion moved from Sønderborg north to Fredericia area. And from there, I come to the officer school, a cadet school, Kronborg, Helsingør, on the old castle, Kronborg, Hamlet Castle, you know. And there I was on the 9th of April 1940. And from there, we then went to the different regiments when there was this kind of capitulation. And from Fredericia in the late 40, I went to the officer school in Copenhagen on account it was allowed by the Germans that we could continue our training and education and so on. So in 1940, I guess it was July or August, I entered the officer school.
Did Did the German invasion take you by surprise, personally?
In 40?
In 1940?
No. It wasn't a surprise on account of the intelligence information, but the government would not listen to all the information coming from intelligence sites. I guess we had about the same condition as you had in England, where no one but Churchill believed that something would happen. And the same was here. It was a political problem. The socialists said, oh, no, we have a pact, non-aggression pact with Germany, nothing will happen. And the radical socialist government believed in nothing would happen, and have, in fact, they had cut down the defense and exactly as it was in your country. But up to the 9th of April, there was so reliable information coming from our intelligence sources in Germany that the clever people, of course, knew what was going on. And the days before there were reporting of ships with troops in the German harbors and motorized division in the northern part of Germany ready for crossing the border into Denmark. Then there was also the mining. So with my experience today as intelligence officer, I would say that it was impossible not to believe in aggression would take place. Oh, I have seen it also was laid on in Czechoslovakia. We knew what was going on account of the information, the comment and all that. Well, that's not to say.
What kind of equipment did you have as soldiers in Denmark in April 1940? Was it adequate equipment?
I would say yes. Especially anti-aircraft equipment was very, very small in number and was old-fashioned. We are not able to do anything. And we have, of course, we had no tanks and nothing. It was an army and also navy and air force kept on a very low scale on account of political decisions. But of course, I guess we could muster about 50,000-60,000 soldiers, and even with old-fashioned armament, they would be able to do something. And the problem was always, would we be able to stop the Germans for so long time that the Norwegians might be able to do something? The Norwegians made it a lot better than we did. So.
What was your first sight of the Germans in Denmark? When did you first see them?
Well, yeah. In the cadet school in Helsingør, we saw the airplanes coming. And later on in 40, when I was in Fredericia as a potential cadet officer, we met them in the streets and the officers, and we were obliged to salute the higher ranking, and they, of course, was supposed to do the same to us. So only little trouble, you know. The soldiers might fight for the girls, the German Danes, for the same girls in some pub and so on. But it was quite peaceful.
How did they behave at first?
Oh, really good. No problems. Too good, in fact. So it was just a confirmation of it. It was very good with this political decision that do nothing, just have a good behavior and do what they wanted to do, was slow. But it changed, of course, in the 41. I guess especially the communists did a lot of good work, also sabotage, and also only a small scale, but it was starting around. And young people in schools, gymnasium, university, they also began to see what was going to happen. So the relationship was going to be worse and worse between Germans and Danes.
What did you decide to do yourself?
I did nothing until 43. I was in the school 40 to 42. And then we came out, and I was then a first lieutenant and horse artillery in Svendborg. You know Svendborg?
Yes.
And there was a little garrison of Germans, I guess 100 people or so, and we had about three batteries, artillery batteries, one with horses, where I was, and then there was some dragoons, a horse guard, what do you call it, laying, was situated a couple of kilometers north of Svendborg, in a place called Hvidkilde. But we had no problems until on the 29th of August, when the government decided to say no. And then the Germans disarmed us, and we were internated. All the officers and all the soldiers internated for sitting different places.
Was there any resistance to the disarming?
Only very little. In Svendborg, very little. We had some shooting a couple of days before, but that was all. You see, the commanding officer, a full colonel, he had not so much against the Germans as we supposed him to have. So, in fact, he followed the government's order to stop fighting and to lay down all the arms and so on. I had a couple of officers, colleagues from the school in my battery, and we decided 2-3 days before that we would ask for permission to destroy some of the depots with guns and equipment, or any all kind of equipment. And we were so loyal, so we asked, are we allowed to go out and destroy this depot there, and so on and so. And our battery commander said, well, I must ask the battalion commander, I must ask. So. And of course they said, no, you are not allowed to. So we did nothing. It was a problem of loyalty, and it's become more and more difficult to be loyal to the order from the Ministry of War, and again inspired by a government. So in after the internat, you know, we were internated for about 2-3 months, and then the Germans said, well, all the trouble in Denmark is caused by the Jews. So now we take all the Jews beginning of October. In 43. We take all the Jews, and then we can let all the officers and soldiers go free and come back to their families and blah, blah, blah. So then we were sent to different colleges to get some supplying some education of various character. I was in Polytechnic University to study, but after a few weeks, maybe a month, I was involved with some underground people. And also I was a bodyguard from the commanding general in Denmark. I didn't know why, but I was selected together with some others to come every, every 6 or 7 days to his house in the northern part of Copenhagen, and be a bodyguard for him and his wife and son. There was, so I had a lot of discussions with him. And he was a very estimated officer, a general, and he had the problem. He has to be loyal, of course, to the government when existing, and later on he has to be loyal to what was left of authority in Denmark and to his own officers. He was just between two forces. And we discussed some problems, but I was a very junior officer and he was a very high ranking general. So of course our conversation was influenced by that. But
what was his name?
Gortz, G O R T Z. And he was later on the commanding officer for all the forces, underground forces in Denmark. Well, but then I was, as I told you, in 43, I guess in October, late October, September, November, I was involved with some young people who want to be trained in using our armament, and I got the men from a lady whose husband was a captain in a technical corps, and she was in fact a famous lady. He had also some roots to Sweden, and so I was involved with some young people. She gave me, okay, I have 7, 8 men, and they would like to be trained. So young civilians. So we started, I got a pistol from somewhere, and I started to learn them to use a pistol and to party and all that.
Where did you do this?
Verschiedene places. So a room somewhere in Copenhagen, in a kælder, and probably in my own my own room in my parents' house in Copenhagen. It was not dangerous, but then.
Did you know their names?
Yes.
Did you know the names?
Yeah,
of these?
I know the names. But these 7 men, they were, of course, more and more experienced. And then we started to train them to get weapon, to get a pistol from the German officers. Then we took out in the forest and saw some officer walking with a girl. And then you can, of course, you can knock him down and take his gun. Or you go into a restaurant and you see all the belts with guns hanging from some, what do you call it, hanging in the pub, and then you can steal it. So we got more and more, and then I trained them to be, they learned about using explosives. It's theory. We had none of the material, but I trained them in to compute how much and what, how do you do it and such things. Well, then we got a little, I know from Paul, we stole it on, and get more and more people, and then in the beginning of 44, I have more than 100 men in my own little company. And they were better and better trained, of course, and they have got some practice in making sabotage and small sabotage, and also in executing certain people, and they were trained. And but upon that time, it was the Council for Freedom, we'll call it, was formed in Copenhagen. And the aim of this council was, of course, to coordinate all these different groups of underground people to get a disciplinated force out of it. And therefore, I was asked to join a region of other civilians and military underground people, and to be second in command of this region. I guess it was about 600-700 people.
Who asked you to join it?
It was Lieutenant Colonel from the Technical Corps. I had contact with him, and I said, okay. And then I had, of course, to give up my free movement and be under command of this region. But I was second in command, and then I gave my unit to another man. Then, later on, I was in command of this region on account of the commander was taken by the German and Gestapo, and later on he died in KZ camp in Germany. It was so that I guess we had about 1,000 people there in the beginning of 44, and this region, we had the idea it was required to make it uncertain the number of people this unit consisted of. So we called it a P group. It could be a platoon or a group or a battalion, or so you know, you could see the size of it. So P5, there was my former company, and it was P5. Then we made up P1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8. That was the whole region called number 3 in Copenhagen. So the whole Copenhagen area was divided into 8 different regions. And when the calculation came, I would guess the whole force was about 10,000.